Welcome to Flyover Conservative Podcast with David and Stacey Whited, where we break down current events and examine culture through the lens of conservative Christian values.
Pretty excited on the show today. It's an interesting time we're in, where most of my life growing up, most of the people that had influence in your world, you knew them. It was an aunt or an uncle, a person across the street, might have been a coach or boss, a coworker, and we're in an interesting place today where you can learn a skill from somebody on another continent that you never met. You can learn ideas from somebody that's in another place. So I'd almost say most people today have a larger percentage of influence from people that they don't have personal relationship.
So true.
With that.
There's no consequences for
it. You can get advice from somebody. They give you advice. You go implement that in your life, in your marriage, in your parenting or something. And, you can't come back to your aunt and say, hey, I did what you said and that was terrible, because there's no relational, equity in that. There's upsides to that and there's downsides to that, probably 3 or 4 months ago, there's a new person that started showing up on my algorithm, wherever, however that is created, started showing up on my YouTube feed and reels and shorts. I'm like, those are intriguing ideas. I'm so thankful for that component because at the same time, while there are negative voices being magnified and influencing people with crazy ideas, there is an increasing tide of people with good ideas who think things through deeply in private, challenge what they're being told, pontificate on that, also take it to God, refine that, and actually say, that's not true. I think actually based on all of world history, biblical wisdom, what's worked out in reality, this is a truth. And today's world's given them a platform to be able to do that. I'm excited to talk to today's guest. She's an author of two books. Yep. She's the age of our youngest child, and it's just an amazing accomplishment. What's going on? Daily Show on YouTube, almost a million followers on Instagram, which I'm glad this individual has this kind of platform. Author of a book called The End of the Alphabet. We're going to get into that a little bit with Isabel Brown.
Yay!
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Well,
absolutely. Well, David did not actually kind of go through some of your history in college, because I want to share that. A lot of people
the
see
credits would be rolling.
Yeah, they would. I know. See you as an influencer, but also talk about your experience in college. You actually have a degree, a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. So go into a little bit of that as well.
Pretty smart.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, to tell you the truth, I never thought in a million years I would have a career in media, or certainly even adjacent to politics. Really, since I was a young child, my passion has always been science, and with science, the pursuit of objective truth, which was what led me to pursue both of my degrees in biomedical sciences on a pre-med track to hopefully use that in the realm of surgery or medicine in some formal capacity. Obviously, God threw my life in a totally different direction, namely when I showed up to my undergraduate college campus at Colorado State University, hardly a very controversial campus, one would think, and was sitting in my classes like anatomy and physiology and organic chemistry, instead of pursuing objective truth, arguing with my professors over their political opinions, or even being told on a multiple choice test that the wrong answer choice for the origins of the universe was that God could have possibly had any hand in it. And I realized very, very quickly that pursuit of objective truth, which I think we've all seen behind the curtain now, thanks to COVID in these last few years, really isn't present in academia, in science, or in science at large. When you're being told that abortion does not end a genetically unique human life, or that your chromosomes have nothing to do with your gender identity, it's a really upside down reality and world. But I've never been one to sit down and be quiet, especially when truth is under attack in academia. So I decided to be involved and get a part of the process way back when I was in college a few years ago, and started a Turning Point USA chapter or club on my campus to go on offense to fight this culture war and to fight for intellectual dialogue and a challenge of perspectives and objective truth. I wrote my first book about my college experience called Frontlines, and discovered very, very quickly what it takes for these young individuals in America, young adults, to be fighting in an era and in a culture war that those older than us are unwilling to do. I got all of the backlash for that. Lots of death threats and my address getting doxxed online. But I fell in love with activism along the way and knew that I couldn't stop this generational conversation. Now I do it in a bit of a different venue on social media than on a college campus. But I'm incredibly blessed to have the opportunities that I do. And I still like to tell people that my job is still to get up and tell people the truth every day.
I love it. What would you say it was about your background that gave you the ability, because thousands and thousands of kids have that experience right up to questioning it that you did? You know, our kids are now, you know, the partners with us in Flyover, but we've owned three businesses with them, and they grew up, you know, very kind of entrepreneurial and that, and we've lived in, you know, orphanages in Mexico. They kind of had a unique background, but I feel like I intentionally prepared them as children. Like, they went to private Christian school. And if you would have been a fly on the wall at dinner, we always had dinner together, no matter what. If it had to be 5 o'clock or 9 o'clock, we always had at the table together. And they would share what they learned in school. And I was like the antagonist. I was like questioning it. Well, but you know, what about this? Or, you know,
even like Bible class.
Oh yeah. The Bible class would be like, okay, you know, when, you know, Cain killed Abel, and then he, like, you know, was bargaining with God, like, don't send me off there. Those people will kill me. I was like, well, who's he afraid of? Who's going to kill Cain? You know? And they're like, well, I don't know. My teacher didn't say, you know, so we'd have these conversations. Mm-hmm. I would create rabbit trails with like vacuums that I wanted them to fill themselves. Mm-hmm. And they were like seven, you know, and six and eight, but creating that where it's not just you're told something and, well, that's it. And I was intentionally preparing them to think independently when they were outside of arm's length, you know, from me.
Yeah.
Did you feel like that happened for you growing up, or was it just a unique thing for you, or did God kind of download some stuff into you that set that in question? Because you would think that would be more normal, but most people kind of go with the flow and I'm just going to pass the test and do my thing and go on. What is it in your background that you feel like kind of prepared you for that moment?
Probably a bit of all of the above. Certainly, I credit God with all of the opportunities that I've had in the last several years. I never could have built this type of platform all on my own, but I grew up in a very similar environment. My parents are both Catholic lawyers, so we spent a lot of time talking about
religion
around the dinner table. And that was our rule growing up, just like you were explaining with your family. There was no such thing as a kid's table. We were expected to sit with the adults at Thanksgiving dinner or even Friday night pizza parties and talk with our parents about what was going on in the world. Our parents encouraged us to watch stuff like the State of the Union and understand what was happening in our country. But I really credit most of the confidence that I have in speaking up to joining the competitive speech and debate team in high school, which my mom forced me to do as a sophomore at 15.
Way to go,
Mom.
It
was basically social suicide at the time. And I said, I already don't have a lot of friends. Are you sure I have to do this? And she said, if you can go 3 weekends in a row and you still hate it, I won't make you do it anymore. I realized pretty quickly if I tried, I could probably be pretty good at speech and debate. I was very fortunate to represent the state of Colorado, where I grew up, at the national tournament several times. I was the captain of our team in high school. And it forced me to think about things, not just politically, but culturally, from this 360-degree perspective, because you never know when you're walking into a debate tournament which side of an argument you're going to take until you get into that room. And you have to be prepared to back things up with evidence, with data, with statistics and logic. And I think really being forced at a young age, 15, 16, 17 years old, to think about stuff like freedom of speech and the Constitution, to think about the economy and these very difficult subjects that most adults don't even confront on college campuses these days, from that 360-degree perspective, really allowed me, as a true scientist, to think about all of the evidence out there and to follow the truth from there.
That is great. Obviously, you know, you're going to be married here soon, but you're not married. You're not a parent yet. But coming from the perspective of what you went through in college, what would be your recommendation for parents as they're sending their kids to college to help to prepare them for what that might look like in the future?
I'm going to give a little bit of background that we're at a lot of live events and parents will come up to me and they're like, I wish we could get, like, could your son talk to our son, you know, or something like this. He's like a senior in college and they've lost contact with him. Like, could you help fix him?
Right.
You know, and some of me is like, that preemptive strike maybe needed to take place, you know, sooner. What advice do you have with that issue being in there for so many families?
You know, I'm not a parent yet, so I'll never pretend to be an expert on parenting. But I will say that there was somewhat of a magic formula in our family from the child's perspective, being exposed to adult conversations and tough things going on in the world pretty early on in life, particularly in our early teenage years. I think we've been so conditioned to avoid talking about the two most important values-based topics under the sun with our children at the dinner table, politics and religion, because you don't ever want to offend anybody. And we've trained an entire generation of people who came just before myself, millennials, to avoid those topics at all costs with their friends, in their job positions, at school, certainly, and everywhere else as well. And it's created a generation of people who had no sense of political or religious values when they were dropped off on their college campus and blindly, perhaps naively, but it's hard to blame them, accepting what their professors, the experts, said as fact, when in reality, it was nothing but political indoctrination. I don't think there's a more powerful example of what that looks like than what we're seeing right now with these extreme encampments for Gaza happening on college campuses today. By the way, most of those protesters are not even students. They are paid protesters that are being bussed around, but they're slightly older than myself. They're millennials, and they bought into all of this because of what their professors told them. I think it's really, really easy for an 18-year-old to be dropped off on day one, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and life full of eyes, or eyes full of life, willing and ready to accept what their professors are saying as fact because you're hungry to learn. You're hungry for an opportunity to expand your mind. But unfortunately, that expansion of your mind, that critical thinking piece is not what's being taught on 99% of college campuses today. They're teaching you how to think, not what to think. So if I had any advice for parents of teenagers, especially, talk to your kids now about what's going on in both politics and culture, as well as religion, and give them a bit of a foundation. It doesn't have to be rock solid quite yet when they're ready to go off into the world, either on their college campus or not, so that they're not rocked so much by the changing nature of the radical authoritarian left every single day.
That is great advice.
And I'm, you know, it'd be just a crazy statement to say, like, you've been called names. But a lot of our daily method of operation for most people is to like avoid confrontation. Like, I don't ever want anyone to think bad of me. And somebody, you know, you may have an argument saying, hey, this is a coffee mug and something simple. And they're like, well, you're a racist. You know, it's like, how'd you make that jump? And I tell people often, like, you'd better figure it out for yourself if you're a racist or not. Mm-hmm. And then if you are, work on it. If you're not, then don't be swayed one way or another. But how have you processed that? Because regardless of how tough you are and how refined your identity is in private, when you go into public, that's never fun. Nobody likes to be shouted down. Nobody likes to be labeled as the bad person and things like that. How have you personally, as Isabel, worked that out inside of you? Because you're very public. And you probably would get, you know, more comment sections, more things said than most people would in a lifetime. You might get in a day. So how do you work that out yourself?
You know, I always tell college students in particular, it was a lot harder when I was hearing these things out loud on my college campus than now when I see these things professionally in my DMs inbox or in my comment section. Yeah. And the first time in particular, I was called any of these names, a white supremacist or misogynistic or Islamophobic or whatever. I mean, all of the phobias that we love to throw around. It was very, very difficult. I went home, I probably cried for 2 weeks, right? Because you never want to give someone the impression that you're this hateful, angry, bigoted, exclusive person. But I discovered really quickly that we've become very effective with the radical left running things in society, shutting down productive dialogue and even that pursuit of truth by scaring people into submission, by calling them the worst possible names under the sun, even when there's not an inkling of evidence to support one of those claims, because it's effective in getting people to sit down and shut up. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be totally transparent with you. And I thought about this not just politically, but from a religious lens for a very long time. And I realized that I think we've become very well adjusted in the last several decades in America, certainly within the lifetime of my grandparents, perhaps, that being a conservative Christian individual was fairly relatively normal. You would go to church on Sunday and that was where your community was. You would spend time with your friends at church camp in the summer. You would all watch football games on Sundays after church and you would talk about these things publicly. And it became so normal that we became quite comfortable and we have forgotten that persecution comes hand in hand with the territory of following Christ. In fact, he reminds us repeatedly throughout the Gospels that we are not going to receive the love and adoration and acceptance of this world. Rather, we're going to be hated. That is the word that Jesus Christ uses regularly throughout the Gospels. They will hate you, but they first hated me. Blessed are you when they persecute you, when they revile you, when they utter all sorts of evil against you falsely because of me. And the longer I really parsed this out in my mind, I realized that if your faith is the most important thing in your life, which for me it certainly is, following and sharing truth is not just a fact of biology or a fact of physics, but really is following Christ because he is the truth with a capital T. And that's exactly what we're called to do, is share that message to a world that's rejecting that very concept. There's going to be a lot of hatred thrown your way because of it. But I like to see these now as flashing marquee signs that I am running in the right direction instead of receiving the acceptance of the world.
It's also kind of reassuring to realize, you know, you get called a name and you're still standing. You're still breathing.
Yeah, you can handle it.
The sun keeps coming up. You know, the world's still spinning. And I think once people kind of go through that, they're like, oh, that's the worst thing that could happen.
And I'm okay.
I'm okay. Mm-hmm. You know, but a lot of people never get, I almost say, the blessing of experiencing that. Mm-hmm. You know, and going through that and then standing on the other side. And it's like, oh, now I can move forward with a tremendous amount of freedom, maybe even write, you know, books about it. So I think that's an incredible thing. Let's jump into your book.
Yeah, I would like to talk about the book, The End of the Alphabet, How Gen Z Can Save America, because this is encouraging. That tagline, How Gen Z Can Save America, that is very exciting.
Yay, Gen Z, come on.
Yeah. So talk a little bit, if our listeners are unaware, can you talk about the different generations and then where we are today? And like, even what are we at, Alpha now, how these new names are coming up. But what are the timelines on these as well?
And we didn't really grow up with those things. So it's kind of a new idea. So maybe educate our listeners on, a lot of probably don't know what they are. So what are these groups and kind of what are their broad stroke, you know, definitions?
Absolutely. So I think it's important just to lay the lay of the land here. When we're talking about Generation Z, we're talking about a group of about 70 million Americans born between 1997. That's the year I was born. So I'm the elder millennial, or the elder Gen Zers, as they call us, those born in the 1900s. I hear that on TikTok all the time. It makes me feel ancient. All the way down to about 2012. So 12 to 13 year olds, all the way up through 27, 26 year olds. And that's a very, very diverse, hyper-independent group of people. It would be impossible to put a blanket statement over an entire generation, but I fundamentally do believe that Gen Z is going to be this saving grace for Western civilization and for traditional values because of exactly the lifestyle choices and the culture that we're seeing play out right before our very eyes. I've raised a lot of eyebrows since publishing this book, especially in traditional media on Fox News and Newsmax and in print media, when I say that, because everyone likes to say that Gen Z is destroying America. And part of the reason I decided to write this book is over the last several years throughout college, my young adult years, working in politics at the U.S. Senate, at the White House for the Trump administration, certainly in media and for most political nonprofits you might be familiar with, I'm often asked to be a token voice of our generation and to speak to the values of those of us under the age of 27. But I'm usually greeted with a wagging finger and a bit of a shunning attitude because Gen Z is squarely blamed for the rise of gender theory, for the insane things that we're seeing with the abortion industry today, for the pornographic books that we see in elementary schools across the country. And I think most people don't realize that A, millennials and Gen Z have fundamentally different worldviews, but B, that most Gen Zers are still teenagers. There's no way they could possibly be responsible.
Say, how many Gen Z university deans are there in America?
Exactly. Yeah. Someday maybe, but we're definitely not there yet. So I really wanted to tell the truth and expose the world to this reality that, shockingly, Gen Z is actually proving ourselves to be the most culturally conservative generation America has seen since World War II. What do I mean by culturally? I think it's so important we remember the late, great Andrew Breitbart's famous quote, politics is downstream from culture. You can never expect to change what's happening in the Oval Office or in the halls of Congress if you can't change what's happening with people's day-to-day lives first. That is exactly what this group of rebellious young people, which tracks throughout all of human history, is doing. It just so happens that to be rebellious and punk rock and countercultural today, you embrace these traditional, timeless, conservative values. 93% of Gen Z, for example, says that we want to get married in a time that we have the lowest marriage rate. In
what,
America,
Isabel, what percentage?
93%, you said?
93% of us say that we
that
want to
get married. That is great to hear.
That's a recent Her Campus survey. More of us are registering for trade schools or for STEM programs rather than the liberal arts than ever before in modern history. There was a great piece about that in the Wall Street Journal the other day. We're starting our own businesses. 62% of us have already done that, and it's only on the rise for this next group of the younger cohort of us. Yep. And even on the seemingly smaller things that I think most people aren't realizing will affect culture and politics, we're giving a bit of a metaphorical middle finger to the authoritarian left and rejecting this utopian leftist, socialistic, Marxist society by quitting our hormonal birth control in droves. So much so that the Washington Post wrote an absolute freak out article blaming it on QAnon influencer propaganda. We're going to church regularly and seeking tradition and rigidity in our faith rather than this half in, half out cultural Christianity. We're moving out of big cities, even to smaller communities. And there's a whole trend of homesteading on social media to grow your own food and reconnect with nature. And you're watching this cultural pendulum shift so substantially in America today with Gen Z that I know that it's going to manifest politically as well.
I would say the gangster on a college campus today, you know, might be wearing like, you know, a collared polo shirt, have no tattoos and look more like Charlie Kirk than to look like, you know, some real rebel. Like that's the rebel, you know, today. Like if you're this like, you know, I'm going against the grain. I'm going to stick it to the man. And he looks like, you know, he works at Target or something, you know, it like those, that is, it's almost like if you're an NBA player and you're like, I'm going to be a rebel. I'm not going to, and like had no tattoos. Like if you're an NBA player without one tattoo, like, you know, like Dwight Howard didn't have any tattoos. It's like, wow, that really is.
He went against the grain.
That's the rebel.
Yeah.
The rebel today. It does kind of swing back. What are the things like technology, timeline? What are the things that are fueling that or have created that? Like, kind of what's the thing behind the thing that you think is creating these realities that you're talking about, these shifts and trends?
A couple of weeks ago on my daily live stream, we read out something that I had never been exposed to until a few months ago, that there were a published set of 45 goals for the American Communist Party 60 years ago that were read into the congressional record in 1963. And it's incredibly eye-opening when you think about this culture upstream from politics side of things and how the left has seemed to understand this far more effectively than the right for decades and decades. At the time that this was read into the congressional record in 1963, the then goals of the radical left in America were to take over journalism and the mainstream media to promote Marxism, to take over the entertainment industry, to promote degeneracy and devalue the family, to take over the education system in America and promote Marxism through academia at all levels of education. And I could keep going example by example, even devalue the family. Their goal was to raise the number of divorces happening in this country and to decrease the number of marriages so that the family unit would start to dissolve. Sadly, 60 plus years later, I think they've really succeeded in accomplishing most of those goals. And that's a harrowing reality for us to face. But it's also quite encouraging because, as I said, there's a pattern throughout all of human history where every group of young people wants to rebel against the people who came before them. And to be this punk rock countercultural rebel in society is to say no thank you to every pillar of culture that the left has successfully taken over and to do something new. So what we're watching right now is this return to traditional and timeless cultural values, but in politically kind of a new age way. And I think that's been frustrating and confusing to a lot of people on the right in particular, who have written Gen Z off before we've even grown up as to be this socialistic, entitled, groupthink, feelings-oriented generation that's just not worthy of even being pitched the conservative dream for America, even though we are living that out ourselves. And I think maybe the most effective way we're sharing these values is through technology and social media. I certainly haven't made a lot of friends on the right in the last couple of months defending TikTok and why it's so important that we continue reaching Gen Zers through social media. But if you think about it, look at platforms in America that traditionally the right has heralded as the place we spread information. A, the mainstream media, which nobody is watching TV or listening to radio right. within our generation, or Twitter, perhaps, which has about 500 million users worldwide today, the highest it's ever had, and really has become an echo chamber of journalists and people with blue check marks. But then you contrast that with a platform like TikTok, where it doesn't matter if you're verified or not. It doesn't matter if you're a journalist or not. 170 million Americans alone are present on this platform and use it at least monthly. And 70% of those users are Gen Zers. If you do the math, there's only 70 million Gen Zers in America. So that's almost every single one of us. And contrary to the narrative that you're hearing out of Washington or certainly out of New York with these mainstream television networks, more of anything I see on TikTok, conservative, Christian, rebellious, countercultural content from kids sitting in their dorm room or the passenger seat of their car in their sweatpants or putting their makeup on in the morning, talking about how much they hate Joe Biden or how their faith has totally transformed their life and they want to share that with others. There's this sense of authenticity and transparency in how we dialogue about political and religious and cultural values within Gen Z. And I'm so excited to try to bring more generations into the fold for how we communicate those ideas. Yeah. Because for the first time, somebody sitting in a sweatsuit in the spare bedroom of their house with a camera over their desk has just as much of an opportunity to influence the masses as the president of the United States.
Or more.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And because media was not doing their job, there was a need for this to actually happen. You know, because there was a propaganda that was given to the United States through media, it's like now people are like, I'm looking elsewhere because this is fake news. I'm tired of it and I'm looking other places, and it gave opportunities for other people.
Absolutely true. Could not agree more. And you know, the biggest message that I really want to share through this book, A, it's written for Gen Zers because we need some blueprints for leadership opportunities within our generation. But B, it's also written for those older than us and to really understand who Generation Z is, to have hope in our generation at a time where we're told all is lost and we're losing our country day by day. Which is true, but the answer to that is never to write off the next generation. It's to give us a seat at the table and to hand us the megaphone, which is the very foundation of this country. I love asking high schoolers and college students when I speak on campus to describe the founding fathers. What did they look like? And usually I get a unison robotic answer of old white men. Old white men.
Yeah.
Sagging, geriatric, evil, racist, ancient old white men who couldn't possibly have understood pop culture at the time in the 1770s versus today in 2024. But I was never taught this. Doing more research about it, the reality is on July 4th, 1776, our founding fathers were teenagers and early 20-somethings. James Monroe was only 18. Aaron Burr was 20. John Marshall was 20. Betsy Ross was only 24 when she designed our flag. Alexander Hamilton was 21 years old. And Thomas Jefferson, who wrote most of our founding documents, was only 33 on our nation's Independence Day. What you saw then was a group of ragtag, rebellious, countercultural young
Big
people.
Time.
Willing to stand up and speak truth to power to those who had manipulated systems of power for far too long when no one else was. I spent a lot of time this election cycle with a couple of candidates on the campaign trail, including a full day with Vivek Ramaswamy in Iowa. Mm. And I remember hearing him say repeatedly throughout the day that 2024 is a 1776 moment. If you think about the young nature of our founding fathers and the desperate need for a new generation of leadership culturally and politically today in America, I could not agree with that sentiment more.
And there seems to be an embracing of that. Let's say some of these images of the far left radical, you know, which is not by mainstream media isn't typically called far left radical. That's like branded as normal, you know, which is crazy. And then something like being fit is considered like a right wing thing. Mm-hmm. Having kids is like a right wing thing. Elon Musk tweeted out something this morning, you know, from Ashley St. Clair, like from a Politico article talking about like having kids is a right wing, you know, kind of thing. But I look at my children and their friends, like they embrace David Goggins, you know, stay hard, man. You know, how much like they almost push back on that label so much of being soft, of being weak, yeah. of being a mm-hmm. complainer, being an HR nightmare. They're swinging this way and they have a cold plunge and they're first one to work and they're, I'm going to start my day at 5. And like, so there's these two ends, you know, that are like pushing it further mm-hmm. on both sides. And I kind of wonder what will kind of create, you know, in the middle, you know, from that moving forward, because this far left side gets most of the mainstream media attention. And that yeah. kind of becomes the perception of that's what it is. But man, there are so many. I could list like 50 people I know that are like 25 years old that, I mean, scare me. I'm one of the hardest working people I've ever met. We started our first company at 23. And some of these young people, I'm like, man, I don't know if I could run with them. They work mm-hmm. so hard. They show up early. They do more, and they embrace that other side. It's like almost a rebellious pushback. They're working harder, mm-hmm. doing more. How do you think that'll unfold in the middle as it goes forward with these two mm-hmm. extremes pushing both sides?
That's such an interesting perspective. And I think you're right. Sadly, the extreme leftist side of things gets almost 100% yeah. of the attention mm-hmm. from the media.
And that's not that generation. That's not all of it.
No, not at all. And I think mm-hmm. there's been a necessary rise of voices like David Goggins or Jordan Peterson, yeah. not saying anything particularly controversial, but good structured rules for how to have a successful and happy life that for whatever reason, the mainstream media is freaking out about. You're right about that Politico mm-hmm. article. I think I'm going to stream about it today, actually. But they actually said the far right is so obsessed with making babies that they just held a whole conference about it. Well, I hope we're holding conferences right. about that or getting married or freedom mm-hmm. of speech rather than all the insane things that you see the left try to put on around the country. But they're obsessed with creating this normalcy is a far right anti-cultural reality that we should be rejecting. And I think even the right has had a really hard time responding to that far often, because the longer I've researched this, the more I've realized conservatives historically have always in modern history had to be on defense, and rightfully so. We've mm-hmm. necessarily had to defend the position of conservatism from the left when they are hurling these insane insults and headlines at us 24/7, 365. Mm-hmm. But we're struggling to make that switch to offense and learn how to create a blueprint for a better America moving forward. I'm hopeful to do that in my book and all of my content, but I think we have to start with culture and let it manifest from there, and also give people the opportunity to think independently and think critically again, rather than saying that side's evil, this side's good, you got to be over here or else. And I love seeing Gen Z embrace that opportunity for ourselves. For example, of newly registered voters going into the 2024 election, 53% of them are self-registering as independent with a capital
wow.
I.
Wow.
That doesn't mean they're rejecting conservative values. To the contrary, they're embracing the most conservative mm-hmm. value of all, which is critical thinking again, instead of blind allegiance to a two-party system that frankly looks a lot more like a uniparty
it
in
does.
Washington, D.C.
That's exactly right. Wow.
Isabel, I am blown away by you. So excited about what you're doing. So for the Flyover family, if they have not been had the opportunity to listen to you, to kind of participate in what you're doing, where's the best place for them to follow you?
I am on every social media platform under the sun. You can find me by looking up The Isabel, Isabel Brown. And if you are a Gen Zer or you have Gen Zers in your life, or you're just looking to learn more about our generation, my new book, The End of the Alphabet, How Gen Z Can Save America, yeah. is for you. You can buy it anywhere books are sold.
I encourage you, like, if you're yes. if you're a grandparent watching this, or you're a parent, you know, watching this, like, this might be a good bridging opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, if you bought this book, it's going to give you a better language to have a worthwhile conversation mm-hmm. with the people in your life. It's best, like, if you're a missionary going to a foreign country, you're better served to understand their culture, to understand their language. If you're going to share the gospel in a foreign land, you need to understand the people that you're talking about. And now our Thanksgiving tables have become, you know, a missionary ground, you know, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. And you need to bridge this gap. This book will give you the language to be able to do this. And it might be a good opportunity to tell your child, your grandchild, say, hey, this book was interesting. Would you read it? I'd love to talk to you about it and get your feedback on it and invite them into a conversation about these topics using their language. And I think
and complimenting them at the same time, how yes. Gen Z can save America. I mean, that's exciting.
And I think there's a humility in that our generation, others mm-hmm. need to embrace and say, you know what? Hey, we're not served. Nobody's served in their body by standing on nails and wrecking their feet. You know, right. We're standing on this generation moving forward. And we need more humility in our group to say, hey, what can we do to have a worthwhile conversation with you? But it's hard if you don't speak the language. This book can help you do that and engage in coming together. So I thank you for creating that. But I encourage our listeners, get a copy of this and probably two, and say, hey, if you read this, if I read this, would you have a conversation with me about this? I think this could be a really good opportunity heading into the summer and 4th of July mm-hmm. and things where you're going to be seeing the people in your life when they're back home or visiting. This book would be a great way to mm-hmm. come together.
Isabel, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, and keep up the great work.
All right, Flavor family. My name is Avery Whited. I'm the daughter of David and Stacy. I'm just moving in, so I had to get an order for my pillow and get the things that I needed. So, let's look inside. I got some My Pillow towels, kitchen towels. I got some of their Giza sheets. Now, I've never actually been able to use them, but I've heard amazing things from my parents about them. And last but not least, something for Charlie. Hey, dog bed. All right, Charlie, let's go put this in the dryer and fluff it up for you. Come on, buddy. No. Nice and warm and fluffy. Perfect for my little guy. Come here, Charlie. All right, if you want to get your own products, go to mypillow.com and use promo code FLYOVER to save up to 66% off.
It's one of our favorite segments in the medical world. You guys probably do this when you have a friend at church and he is an expert, he's an attorney, and you try to get some free law advice.
Yep.
If you were doing a thing on an easement on your property, I feel this way with this segment. There's a medical practice that when you look at the world of medicine, people have felt it shifting. COVID accelerated it dramatically. But people have thought to themselves, like, what if I could go to a medical practice that had multiple doctors, multiple lines of thought, all under one roof, all sharing information together, that could attack things from a dietary standpoint, from a chiropractic standpoint, mm-hmm. from a neurological standpoint, you know, the MDs, everybody all working together to preemptively keep you healthy and functioning at the highest level versus what we've had in the past, which is simply just a pharmaceutical-based, you know, symptom-covering kind of practice. And people have seen the fruit from that, where they're just bandaging, oh, your shoulder hurts, here, take this. Doesn't hurt anymore, does it? But why was it hurting? You know, they don't cover those things. And so we get a chance each week to dive into the brain of somebody who truly gets people from good to great, Dr. Troy Spurl.
Yay!
Yay!
Welcome!
Yay! Thank you. I love your introduction.
Well, it's an interesting time where this industry is shifting faster than any other than maybe the educational, you know, system, you know, where people are like, wow, that's so different than what I mm-hmm. was ever a part of. People that are teachers or you know, it's such a the medical industry, I say, is number two as far as how people look at it, the approach, the way they kind of look at it. As a consultant, I'm getting information, but I'd better take some ownership of what they're telling me. And it's the even the level of trust that people had 3 years ago mm-hmm. is different than now. And they're looking at it. They're looking at the way they approach insurance. What does it pay for? And what is that a path I even want? And is that have anything to do with health? Like, it's all the deck's being reshuffled.
Yeah, absolutely. People they've lost trust. They've lost faith in the healthcare system mm-hmm. and they're starting to take ownership of their health, which is a really good sign. That's actually what we want. We want you to be the director of your healthcare. We want you to be in charge of the board of directors for your healthcare. And so it's a good thing because people are educating themselves what works for them and starting to make some good decisions when it comes to actually getting healthier and taking care of the temple that they've been given.
Well, if you travel at all, whether within our country or you travel any other countries and you look around and you realize we're about 6% of the world's population. We consume 85% of the pharmaceutical drugs in the world. You know, we have the most expensive, most elaborate, mm-hmm. you know, medical facilities. And I don't know that people are healthier. They might be living longer, but they're still mm-hmm. limping in and out of the store. And, you know, you sit at the airport and just kind of watch people. It's like, I don't know that we're the healthiest nation in the world, but disproportionate amount of the money is spent in this world, but it's not necessarily focused on having people be as strong and fit and vibrant and be able to snow ski with their grandkids, mm-hmm. you know, kind of a medical system.
Yeah, we spend the most in the world. Number two is Japan. We're almost double what they are. So we spend the most in the world. We don't even crack the top 50 for most health categories. And in some categories, we're 75th in the world. So there are 74 countries that are ahead of us in health categories, but we're spending more than double than most of these countries.
And we do the most of what we call like self-induced problems. It's like if you went to a town and you say, wow, this town spends 85% of the nation's budget on tires, and at the same time, they put nails in the streets every single day.
Right.
And you're like, wow, they have the most advanced tire shops. They sell the most tires. They do the most tires. And they're also, it's weird in this town. It's illegal in the town I live in to put nails in the streets. But in this town, every night they go and they sprinkle nails in the streets. And that's America. Mm-hmm. With the foods, the ingredients, the GMOs, you know.
The pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
I mean, how many countries can actually run ads on television for pharmaceuticals?
Just us in New Zealand.
Just a couple of countries. I mean,
it's illegal to do that.
Yeah. When I was a kid, you never saw commercials for that.
No, they're selling us on that. And that's a great analogy. I'm going to use that nail and tire analogy.
That's how it feels.
It's the best in analogies.
It's unbelievable. That's a good one, because I used to say up here in Minnesota in the wintertime, avoid the chiropractors who are watering their sidewalks in the wintertime.
True. Yeah.
Same concept, right?
Yep.
Speaking of that, really you have good. An incredible practice. We were just talking before we recorded. You are expanding and looking to hire more people. Your practice is blowing up. And so, you know, if you're watching this and you're in Oregon or you're in Florida or somewhere different, you're like, hey, maybe I'd want to move to Minnesota. Maybe you have friends in Minnesota. Maybe you know people who are saying, you know, I'm in the medical profession and my heart led me to this. As a child, I wanted to be in this, but you look at what you do each day and you don't come home with the kind of fulfillment that you intended. Maybe you would want to work at a practice that's in alignment with your spiritual beliefs, in alignment with health as you see it unfolding. This practice would be a great place to reach out to, and they are actually searching for more partners and employees.
And to tell our listeners, I think most of our listeners now have heard about Official Synapse, but tell them about your practice. What all do you do there?
Well, we do functional medicine. So if you have any training in functional medicine, yeah, you're exactly right. We'd love to hear from you, because we're trying to expand, whether you're a medical doctor, a nurse practitioner, chiropractor, a health coach, especially health coaches. We need help, and it doesn't matter what state you're in, but we'll look and assess how patients are doing mentally, chemically, physically, and my faith is a big part of the healing process as well, and faith should be a big part of the healing process. And so we want to make sure that alignment is there as well. And so if you're searching for that as a patient or as someone who's looking for employment, please reach out, because we do need help. We're working with a lot of people. We're trying to change the healthcare system. And one of the things I was being interviewed in another TV show, and they asked me, they were concerned because I was speaking out pretty vocally about the last 3 years and COVID and the vaccines and stuff like that. And they said, do you have any concern about your life, your health, just speaking like that? And I said, no, absolutely not. Number one. Number two, it's important that we look at the state that we're in as a country. And when George Washington and our founding fathers came here, they came here with conviction. They came here with a belief that God it was leading their charge. And that's what I feel is happening with our healthcare system. And I heard this said once, and this is what I think is very true, that we basically, you have to be all in. When it comes to healthcare, changing the system, a Goliath of a problem, you have to be all in, and you can't be afraid of losing everything, including your life, because if you are, then that means you have a price and you can be bought and paid for. And that's the problem. The people who have been in charge have a price because they're not all in and they've been bought and paid for when it comes to our healthcare system, our politicians, all of it. So we're looking for the men and women who are bold, who are okay with losing everything so that they don't have a price. Just like we're seeing with President Trump and all the hits he's taken, he's all in. He's willing to lose everything. And we're seeing that happen within the healthcare system. So that's just a little bit of my pitch for people to come work here. I'm not going to say you're not going to lose your life, but I want people who are all in.
Sure. And
if you're a patient of Synapse, we pray that you're not going to lose your life as well. We haven't lost one yet. So.
And it's amazing practice. I mean, we've been blown away. So David and I flew there. Avery has been there. And I love this page that Colton's on, because when he scrolls down, it's going to actually show like all of the conditions, not all of them, but a lot of the conditions you guys work with and deal with. And I love that, because I think there's a lot of people that are discouraged about their health and thinking nobody can help me. My health's not going to improve. And that's not accurate, because things that I dealt with restless leg syndrome all my life, and I didn't think anybody could help me. And then I come to your practice, have a couple little tweaks, and literally I do not have problems. We went to dinner last night.
Yep.
I have no problems whatsoever with restless leg syndrome anymore. Yeah. It's exciting.
Well, we
it's
now leave dinners because we're done, not because your legs are bothering you.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it sounds like a simple thing, but it's a game changer.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of people, there's a lot of education that's needed, because people, there's so much information out there. People just need to really dive into who they are and what information is pertinent to them. So that is generally what our job has become, is figuring out mentally and chemically and physically what we need to tweak and what's relevant to you based on the data that we're collecting. And so we've gotten pretty good at that. And we look at everything. So it's very extensive. Look at the whole body. We put through the filter of God and how God designed us, and the filter of what the current science is saying.
One of our favorite things we do when we talk to you, you always have these list of gems, and I don't know how many you have, but we've not come close to exhausting them yet. But my brother, who is not in the health profession at all, not even remotely, sent me a funny video the other day, and I'm like, man, but diet is a big part of our world. What we eat does impact us. And we kind of have created a world where, like, I think it's funny when you watch football games, there's always like, we have pizza, then you got extra pizza, then you got a stuffed crust pizza, then you got, well,
the extra cheese,
the, you know, it's like, eventually they're just going to make like a, they just take you and they wrap your head in a pizza and they just stuff you in a pizza, you know, and it's like
and you eat your way out or something.
Yeah, you see these, like, man, they must have these, you know, meetings of how do they just keep making, you know, things worse and worse for us. But the idea of what we eat and its impact on our body, and this is probably something that's never been played in your clinic, something that probably should not be played on TV, but we're going to play a clip real quick and see if this is any merit in true medicine when it comes to diet and the impact of dairy and cheese on the human system. So here's a reenactment of a cheese issue.
Yep.
That is so bad.
I apologize to our listeners. I'm the one who injected that into the show. So hate on me in the comments, not Stacey or Dr. Troy. But you know, is cheese good for you?
Well, it can be, but it can also be inflammatory for some people, and especially there's actually people who are more predisposed to issues. Genetically, 25% of the population has a potential reaction to it, and so Northern European descent is usually the that region. So we see that. One of the things I do want to comment on, because a lot of people say, they come in, they say, I have diarrhea, and not to get too graphic, although you are the visual king, I'm just going to put that out there.
We've already gone there, so
yeah. But what you just saw there is most diarrhea, not all, but most diarrhea is end stage constipation. And cheese in particular can cause constipation. So when things get blocked up, then the bowels will actually kind of push, but it'll kind of go around things. And then you end up with kind of this explosive bowels. And so it's important to stay regular, number one. But if you are bound up like that, when something's inflammatory, it literally pulls the water out from the air, just like a fire in a forest fire, same in our bowels. So when you're constipated, it's because there's inflammation from the food you're eating or from some other type of bacterial imbalance that's causing that that problem. And so it's really an inflammatory reaction, and the mucous membranes of the intestines actually flare up. That's why some people will actually have stuffy noses after eating cheese. That's a sign you're reacting to the cheese in the gut before you ever get any type of constipation or anything like that.
But is that
I may use that video at the clinic now, David.
Is that mostly, then is the solution more an elimination of that? Or I know, I remember like my grandparents, they always put sprinkled stuff in their cereal. It was increase the fiber. And like, if my grandpa, like if he hadn't gone like that day, it was like,
they're freaking out.
Oh, a big deal. You know, it was, you know, and prunes and all this kind of thing, like everything about staying regular, you know, was a big thing, but it's more of an addition of a supplement, you know, Metamucil or whatever, all these kind of things. Or is it more the elimination of good things question. That are causing the problem, which is a little bit of both in our diet?
It's both. Yeah, it's 100% both. So there is the saying, you are what you eat. The saying should be, you are what you don't eliminate. And so it's a little bit of both. So some things cause inflammation. Other things help promote evacuation. You need both. And so a nice balanced diet is helpful. Most people need to reduce the inflammation, and then you kind of go from there. So that helps you. And then once you build up the evacuation, then you can actually handle more inflammatory foods.
Okay. That's cool, man. Well, thanks for the interesting video, and thanks for the awesome answers on that.
It led to legitimate medical information.
That is true.
And it was funny.
That's true. All right. So let's do, you have time for a couple of gems?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So the first one is for if anyone's ever had like a heavy metal test on their blood, their urine or anything like that, or even their hair, one of the things that gets overlooked a lot is when uranium gets high. And so I've just heard doctors say they get really confused by that. And so if you've ever found high uranium on a hair analysis, urine analysis, or a blood test, I want you to check whether or not you have radon in excess in your house. I cannot tell you how many times we've actually found a radon problem, which is an inert gas that kind of comes up through the foundation of our bedrock usually, and it can cause a lot of problems. People can have like a chronic cough, they can get headaches, fatigue, lethargy, and so they have radon detectors. But you can almost take the bank, unless you're by a nuclear reactor plant, uranium really doesn't get too high, but it is a side effect of radon. We've found dozens of people over the years where with a heavy metal test, uranium being high. Many of them were not even tests I ran, but they came in and they had that lab work already done. And I said, check your basement for radon. And they're always shocked. Like, how did you know? And this is why.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And so the health things that they would get would be headache, like a cough that doesn't go away, those kind of things.
Shortness of breath. Yep. And then pain or tight chest a lot of times. And then even trouble swallowing.
Okay. Mm. Interesting.
Wow.
I got like the sun coming in on me here.
You
I
do. Think
You're like, yeah. like in the presence of the Lord.
Exactly.
Yes. That means I'm speaking truth right now.
There you go. That's right. That's right.
It's just another beautiful sunny day in Minnesota. It's like a paradise.
Yes. Well, yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
So the other one is for sleep. If you have trouble falling asleep, I want you to think that about insulin resistance. So trouble falling asleep can be insulin resistance. Trouble staying asleep can be hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. And then it could also be like an upper airway sleep disorder or a REM sleep disorder. And then trouble waking up, think about a cortisol problem. So there's something called cortisol awakening response. And so cortisol and melatonin are opposing, insulin and melatonin are opposing. So it's very important to just look at lab work and see if your insulin is being regulated properly. For cortisol, sometimes if it's too low, we have inflammation, we can't get to sleep. If it's too high, we don't make enough melatonin or the deep sleep hormone. So stress can cause cortisol, and cortisol is an anti-inflammatory. So it's very, very important, but there's a balance there. So the sleep part of it is a crucial one where we have to balance insulin and cortisol to have proper levels of sleep.
And does cortisol, is that where it actually can cause like even extra weight around your stomach due to stress?
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of times you'll have like a little down time in mid-afternoon. You'll gain weight in the lower abdomen. That's first, that's where the cortisol imbalances are. And then if you have not enough cortisol, you'll have like achy joints and things like that when you wake up. And that is that's like cortisone for athletes. They'll put cortisone shots in there. Cortisol gets converted to cortisone.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. So
if you keep your cortisol levels nice and balanced, then you are actively getting the healthy version of the anti-inflammatory for your joints the entire time. So that's why it's important to balance your melatonin, insulin, and cortisol.
And that could only really be tested by, I mean, obviously you could tell something's wrong just based on how you feel, but lab results?
Yeah, lab results. But again, if you have trouble getting to sleep, staying asleep, and waking up, then that kind of tells you. So getting to sleep, think high cortisol and insulin problems. Staying asleep, think low blood sugar and maybe too much insulin. And then trouble waking up, cortisol is out of balance.
Okay.
And do you counteract that with diet or with supplements or both or like intermittent fasting or eating at certain times or?
Yep. Great question. So a lot of times, so it'll be diet and look at what's setting off the insulin, which is the most common. So sometimes we'll use things like berberine to make the insulin push the sugar into the cells more efficiently. Mm. For people with low cortisol in the morning, trouble waking up, they need actually, and you'll like this, licorice. Licorice root.
Really?
Really?
Not red licorice, but licorice root. And you make more cortisol. And then 3 months later, that cortisol is converting into cortisone. Joint achiness and everything goes away. So you don't take licorice root for extended periods of time because it can raise blood pressure. But it gives you the boost. So a lot of these natural things, and it's got to be natural licorice.
Not Twizzlers.
Not Twizzlers.
Okay. I just want to be clear. Because a lot of our listeners, man, I don't know. They might be like, hey, I got a prescription for Twizzlers from Dr. Troy.
So the last gem I'm going to talk about is actually it can be a disorder, but it's when we have a buildup of what's called cryptopyroli. So cryptopyroli are these little chemicals or acids that get in the blood, and it's from making blood. So right now we have all this weirdness with the spike proteins, and we have some people who hemoglobin's too high. They will start to have symptoms of high cryptopyroli. So I want to talk about that because it's severe anxiety or depression. So it could be either or both. It can also be tendency to stay up late, meaning they don't want to go to sleep. They just stay up. And even though they know they should be going to sleep. Another one is sensitivity to bright lights or loud noises and poor stress control, a tendency to skip breakfast, little to no dream recall, premature graying of the hair, autoimmune disorders, and then this is one of the other telltale signs, if they have some level of pale skin and an inability to tan. So if you go in the sun and you can't tan, then that's another sign. Some people will even have a little white flecks on their fingernails. And the way you fix cryptopyroli, it's a combination of B6 and zinc deficiency. That's all it is. So your hemoglobin can be high usually. And then you start getting these weird symptoms. So a lot of people post-COVID have all this severe anxiety, depression, or poor mood control. Usually people don't have all those symptoms, but they'll have a good 30 to 40% of that symptom list. And it's a dual B6 and zinc deficiency.
That's amazing. Wow. And it's crazy that a couple of things could help to fix all of those issues.
Yeah, severe problems. There's a researcher by the name of Walsh who did phenomenal research, 20 years of research, and figured out exactly the mechanism of how to correct this using B6 and zinc. And there's an art to it a little bit, but generally speaking, I want people to hear that because this is a really big life changer for people who are struggling with this anxiety, depression, and there's like an inner tension that they have too. They always say, something's not right. I don't feel right on the inside. They may look calm on the outside, but they have that inner tension on the inside.
Wow. That could be life-changing.
Especially when you talk about a natural alternative to fix it with no downside, as opposed to
drugs,
the traditional medicine, which is going to be like, hey, we can make you stop feeling whatever it is the problem is. We'll just stop that feeling.
You got a red light on your dashboard? We'll just hit it with a hammer.
Yeah, cover it with some duct tape. You're fine.
Yeah, and it's an easy lab test to test. So it's a urine test, and we can we can measure that with people. And a lot of these people too will have like severe oxidative stress on other labs. So they may actually have cardiovascular dysfunction and or degenerative changes, whether it be memory loss or because short-term memory also gets impacted when those levels get too high. And this can happen with kids. We see it a lot with kids.
Man. Yeah. Okay. So Flavor Fam, if you're listening and thinking, okay, I need to find out more, you can go to officialsynapse.com, officialsynapse.com. And then to get started, you actually have a free call. Is that right, Dr. Yep. Sproul, where people yep. can learn more about your practice? So all I have to do is just fill out your information where it says get started today. And then someone from your office will get a hold of them to set up a time. Is that right, Dr. Sproul?
Yep. They'll get a free discovery call. It's a way for us to get information, what you're looking for. And we're just trying to get people in the right spot, get them as much help as possible.
I love That's it. Amazing. The Bible says we are beautifully and wonderfully made, but there's a lot of stuff that we do to ourselves after that, after we come off the assembly line, you know, yeah. that's kind of self-induced and, you know, and easily correctable, you yes. know, with a lot of these things you bring to the table. And I love that.
Dr. Sproul, thank you so much for your time. Thank you also for the gems and just how brilliant you are, but also how you listen to God at the same time to every equation when you're putting things together. We really appreciate that.
No, I appreciate that as well. Thanks, guys.
My name is Dr. Troy Sproul, and I'm CEO and founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing. While we're a full functional medicine clinic where we're looking at the entirety of the body, we have nurse practitioners, chiropractors, acupuncture. We do functional restoration with BTL equipment, and we have medical doctors on staff as well to help with PRP and other injections for pain relief. We do a multitude of services, labs, nutrition counseling, health coaching, we've got it all. We are constantly being asked about how to improve their immune system. How do I go through a flu season without getting a cold? I myself have gone 30 years without missing a day of work, never gotten a cold, never been sick. And we just show our patients how to do that. We answer those questions. Why am I tired? Why do I have pain? So if you're watching this right now, just go to our website, officialsynapse.com, click on free discovery call, answer three simple questions, and we'll get you started. One more thing, we are the highest rated, most reviewed functional medicine clinic in all of Minnesota.
I love the Tuttle Twins books. They are taking so many things that I want to teach my kids and putting them in these fun stories. My name's Jen. And my sister introduced me to the Tuttle Twins books about a year ago. I just bought the set on a whim, and I'm so glad that I did. It's kind of a crazy world we live in right now. I feel like our education system has been very dumbed down. They've taken a lot of patriotic, you know, curriculum out, and they're putting kind of progressive things in that parents do not agree with. Society today teaches kids to be lazy, to rely on the government. I think as a parent, we should all be teaching kids that they need to work hard. My 8-year-old son, he loves these books. He came up to me the other day, he said, "Mom, can we read Spectacular Show Business?" I said, "Okay." So we read through it, and it's all about being an entrepreneur. And when we were done, he said, "Mom, I want to be an entrepreneur. I'm gonna make a lemonade stand. I'm gonna go save up money. I'm gonna buy this, I'm gonna buy this." And we talked all about it. He was so excited. And I said, "Oh, I love this." The Tuttle Twins books are a really great way to help teach your kids to remember how great their country is and that this is a place where they can be free. They can be an entrepreneur. They learn these wonderful lessons of how our government actually works and why we pay taxes for things and how there are actually bad laws and how we can work to change them. The Tuttle Twins books have been huge in my family. You know, being a conservative parent, I am so happy we found these books. Parents, don't wait. You need to get these books and read them with your kids. Order yours at
Growing up in the heart of the USA, David and Stacy met at school when they were in seventh grade. They started dating at 19 and tied the knot at 20. Yep, it's a love story that warms the heart. At 23 years old, while juggling two kids, Colton and Avery, they started an online brokerage company that soared to unimaginable heights, liberating them from the confines of the 9-to-5 grind. With their newfound freedom, this dynamic duo spent their time globetrotting. What followed was 2 years working on the mission fields, ministry school, marriage workshops, and even a music career. But hold on, folks. That's not where the story ends. In 2016, they saw a businessman they admired become president. During his campaigning, they noticed that he celebrated a system of government of which the founding fathers would have been proud. They had many friends asking for their thoughts on what was happening in politics. It was then that they realized that there was a burning need for a community where real issues could be discussed, debated, and dissected. And so, the Facebook group called Flyover Conservatives was born. As the 2020 election cycle rolled around, their group grew and grew, attracting more patriots by the day. But as we all know, the journey wasn't without its challenges. Big tech began to censor conservative content, shadow banning the flyovers, and subjecting them to daily fact checks that left many scratching their heads. Undeterred, this dynamic duo rose to the occasion. During the infamous Twitter purge, they decided to take matters into their own hands and launched their very own show, streaming on platforms like Rumble. And guess what? Their audience has skyrocketed to over 5 million views a month. With regular guests like General Michael Flynn, Roger Stone, Kash Patel, Robin Bullock, Eric Trump, and so many others, they show absolutely no signs of slowing down.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Flyover Conservatives podcast with David and Stacey Whited. Please subscribe, hit the notification bell, and leave us a comment below. Lastly, if you enjoyed today's podcast, share with those who came to mind. Be blessed and make it a great day.
Yeah.